Welcome back to the Wise Divine Woman podcast, where I help you go from fed up to faith-fueled, helping you to become the wise divine woman that God has called you to be. Today, I have Christine Davies, a new podcast friend that I have found online. I love going behind the scenes and sort of creeping on people, but I really felt a connection when I saw her profile and what she does and what she provides for her people. I thought it would be important to share today on the podcast. Christine, thank you so much for joining. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, your passion, and your purpose.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me here. As you said, my name is Christine Davies. I live in New Jersey with my two school-age children and my husband, and I do a lot of different things. My main job is I am a hospital chaplain, and I run the pastoral care program at Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in New Brunswick, New Jersey. So there I oversee the spiritual care provision to patients, families, and staff. I also teach chaplaincy interns and clergy about how to be with people and how to give emotional and spiritual support. I work as a seminary professor as well, really focusing in on how to help individuals give the best care possible, as well as care for themselves. And on the side, I am a trained spiritual director. So I journey with people individually who are looking to infuse more meaning and purpose and ritual within their life. So that's a little bit about what I do. I am a Presbyterian minister, and so I serve people of all faith traditions or no faith tradition. I happen to come from Presbyterianism, but really try to anticipate what the needs are of people from various walks of life and spiritualities.
I think that's important, regardless of what people's faiths are. They still need or want something to hold on to, and they need that vehicle to apply stress or apply prayer or at least think above themselves, beyond themselves, because we all know that there's greater things than what we see. And I love that. And I do have that same approach as well. When I'm with clients, I'm still going to hold them accountable to something that they can have faith in. Mm-hmm. And I believe it is an essential part of a foundation. Mm-hmm. It's so important when you're looking at, from my end, from a health point of view. And we're finding that I think having that sort of faith in anything, or even everybody has a faith in something, so mm-hmm. it's holding them in that aspect. How are you finding that becomes an essential part of healthcare in the medical system? Mm-hmm. It's a fine balance to have, because it is medical, but you have to have that to make it work, I believe.
Right. Well, and I agree with your assessment that everyone believes in something. It may not be religion, right? And for some people, religion is fraught. It can be quite toxic and traumatic for a lot of individuals. But most people have what Tillich would call an ultimate concern, something that gives their life meaning, that is outside themselves and connects mm-hmm. them with some form of transcendence. And so in the healthcare realm, one of the reasons that I happen to think chaplaincy and really engaging in one's spirituality is important is because it brings up all sorts of issues for people. So a lot of what I deal with, probably about 80% of the cases that I am involved with or my staff are involved with, are around end of life and grief mm-hmm. and loss, and helping shepherding people through that, through the bereavement. Sometimes people know that they're going to be dying, and so it is helping prepare them. Other times it's really a crisis or a traumatic event, and so it's being with that family in a different way. So that is the bulk of it. But even if someone is in the hospital for something routine, like an appendectomy, not going to be there for long, but needs some surgery, it is amazing how much can come up for people when they are lying in that bed, with little else to do, separated from their own community, their own family, with lots of time to think through things, we find that it brings up people's mortality so much, especially if they've never been in a medical setting before, or maybe the last time they were in a hospital, they were saying goodbye to a loved one. So all of those griefs and those past experiences usually bubble up for people. Sometimes they don't know it until they're lying in the bed, sometimes not until they're talking with the chaplain does it come up. And then we're also there for the staff as well, for the nurses, the doctors, the care technicians, everyone, regardless of discipline, because it, as you can imagine, it takes a toll to care for people in that professional setting. And oftentimes these are the stories that people can't go home and tell their friends and families about. And it's really being alongside of those that are doing the work of saving lives every day and
I
getting
think
to be with them.
we see that even more prevalent in society today with the first responders and the caretakers, things like that, that mental health is of the utmost importance, and keeping it inside the body just destroys the body. It destroys the mind. And I know that here in Canada, huge focus on mental health for everyone, not only just the first responders aspects, but getting it in there, getting those people in front, getting them into to counselors, getting them into therapists, it seems to be that focus. But I love that they have incorporated such a heavy importance to pastoral sort of care or spiritual care. It seems to be part of that missing link that is necessary. And I truly appreciate that because it's so needed, especially for the workers, right? They suffer from many traumas, and as we know now, we have such a rise of PTSD, and it's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's there on a daily basis. And then not to mention, COVID and everything. I think all of us in healthcare during that time still have PTSD from that. But the compassion fatigue, the burnout of a daily basis, and folks as first responders, as healthcare workers, they're so good at taking care of other people and putting themselves second and others first. And so I think that adds to the challenge because it is a reframing of really their orientation to the world to think, oh, I have to care for myself too. And in some instances, before I can care for others or so that I can continue to care for others. So I agree. I think I'm glad to see more resources out. I think it's a drop in the bucket. I think we need even more. And hopefully, especially if any of your listeners fall into any of these categories, will make themselves available to some of these areas of support because there still can be a stigma, right? Of, oh, I should be able to get over this. Or maybe you were able to, really paddle through for the first, half of your career, but it does catch up with you. And there is a cumulative effect to professional caregiving, where it doesn't have to be a major event that is going to bring about some of that compassion fatigue.
I would think that with the changes to the healthcare system that has been implemented since COVID, I would think a lot of the ministers, pastors, reverends, those now have sort of a restricted access, whether just trying to see their people that are part of their congregations, in that if they're not listed on the sheet, they can't come to visit anymore. As we see in sort of some of the hospitals here, it's just not like you can go for pastoral care as part of your congregations, go ahead and visit them. And it becomes a little bit of a hurdle for those people in ministry. So I can imagine the increase of work that you've had to take on, kind of covering this through COVID with your hospital. What is the word I'm looking for? Your ability to go through the hospital. And that's why you've probably had a wonderful increase in chaplain care. Which is wonderful. You have all these interns underneath of you, which is really incredible. And so, how have you seen that change? Have you seen that your workload has increased, or you're trying to make accessibility to the different people that are out there in ministerial care have more accessibility.
Yeah, there have been ebbs and flows throughout all of the different waves that we've seen of COVID and what the hospital policies were at various times. So certainly I'm in New Jersey, and in the initial waves, the hospital was, completely restricted from outside visitors. So that included clergy, that also included family members. And so myself and my staff, we were essential workers. So we were there, holding up iPads and helping loved ones, be able to communicate, or in some instances say goodbye in that way. Where I am now, we are fortunate in that, restrictions have been lifted in that regard, and so clergy are still able to come in to, see their people, from their congregational settings. But what I have seen a little bit, and we'll see how the research kind of bears this out going forward, is a lot of people that have maybe not attended worship again after COVID, not gone back to their congregational settings. I have a lot of friends who are congregational clergy, so they tell me this. So I'm hearing it anecdotally, and in the hospital, we hear from people all the time, patients that we're seeing, like, "Oh, now I used to go to church, I don't anymore." Usually, there's a story there, and so I'm always interested in hearing about that from a non-judgmental standpoint. As we said, maybe there's some of that religious trauma there, or something that is needing some healing from a spiritual sense. But I think that really means that we need more chaplaincy coverage, because they don't have these religious or spiritual connections in their community to be able to draw from. And fortunately, we can provide that for them while they're in the hospital.
Interesting. The thought that came to mind was, is that fear still inset on the restrictions that were created, like you're not allowed to see people, don't get in large groups, things like that? And or was it just a convenience now that they don't need to go? Perhaps it's online. I'll catch it later on the re you know after I'll watch it tomorrow. It's just it becomes a convenient aspect. And I can completely relate with that as well. And I see that as well. But as for seniors, it's honestly so important for them to have that connection in their community, because they already have such a limited community. And you really see that with their mental health as they're aging as well. I would probably have to say that for us as well. Like, we are pretty busy, but we don't have a spiritual community as we should have. So.
Well, and I think there's a lot of reasons for that for a lot of people. So what I hear from individuals is that they've not been able to make that connection to a place that matches up with their values, right? And so or the people there that are people that they want to spend time with, and trying to find connection and community in various different ways. So while I might be in church every Sunday, I don't expect that's going to work for everyone. And so part of what I encourage people to do is, where do you go to be with those people that share whatever belief system you do have, right? So it may be, I know people are very into, CrossFit or Peloton, or, so that might be it for some people. It may be these are the people that are engaging in, the exercise or the lifestyle. For others, it may be a bowling league, or it may be volunteering with, a certain group. But really trying to help people see the connections they can gain from that shared social impact of being with others who are engaging in something that is beyond themselves.
So important. It is very, very important. Tell me, what are some ways that we can sort of overcome? I know it's a big topic, so it's a whole topic for another day, I'm sure. But what are some signs, or what are some things, ways that you can overcome this sort of religious trauma?
Yeah, it's a
But
great question.
it's a big topic, so.
Right. Well, yeah, there can be so many particularities of someone's story as it relates to that. So, I mean, I think one of the first things is to be able to name it, right? So I'm a big proponent of, if we name it, we can tame it, right? That's the first step, acknowledging what happened and the impact that it had on you. And I see a lot of people, that may have had something happen to them in the context, we'll just say, of a church. And then, it's humans in the church, but we can put that onto God oftentimes in a way that it isn't God, but that's very much the shortcut that a lot of people take sometimes without even realizing it. So I think the first step is naming it, parsing out what was it, what did it look like. I always recommend working with a therapist, working with a spiritual director, working with a coach, someone else that you can share this with in a non-judgmental way that can help guide you, through a lot of what's been going on for you, and so that you can gain the support from someone else who has that listening presence. But different toxicities have taken different forms. So sometimes it may be abuse within the church, whether that is physical, sexual, emotional abuse. Unfortunately, that is a part of so many people's stories. And then it's also things like theology or spiritual abuse, things that were told to a person in a way in which was not ultimately healthy. And those, I think, are sneakier in some instances, because as society, we've gotten a little bit better at addressing more of the physical and sexual abuse, so that has come to light a little bit more. But what we don't talk about so much might be, what a preacher was saying every Sunday and the ways in which something, maybe it's, I hear from a lot of women, right? Especially women that have grown up in more of a conservative or evangelical tradition, that they were told that, they were bad and everything about them was, a stumbling block and they had no authority or no power. And then what happens is we internalize that without even realizing it. And that takes root. And there's so much shame that is involved in that. And we oftentimes don't even realize that that's what's happened. We just have a reaction to when we hear someone talk about church. We say, oh no, that's not for me. And so it can take, I think, a lot of time and energy to really look at it. And I view it as kind of a knot, full, a bunch of strings all knotted together, and really kind of looking at it as a whole and then going piece by piece and saying, okay, what, how do I, how do I unravel this? How do I claim this again in a way that is healthy for me?
How would one think, or how would one know that perhaps a spiritual director or a spiritual coach would be something that they would need?
Yeah, so I think I work best with people who are looking to analyze some of those pieces in their lives. They don't know who to talk to. Maybe they've tried to talk to, a member of the clergy who's, running a synagogue or running a church, but they're not necessarily interested in joining there. They're wanting to explore some of these larger questions. Maybe they don't have a defined faith or religious value. Maybe they do. I also have clergy as clients, so it can really vary. But I recommend anyone that is looking to kind of find more meaning in their life, infuse their days with something that feels more profound or sacred, identify rituals that they can do that relates to their spirituality, or really a lot of what I do is help people see how their lives are already spiritual in nature. Sometimes it's not, sometimes people come in thinking, oh, I need to meditate for an hour. Well, that may well be good, but if you've never meditated at all, you're not going to jump to an hour. And that's not, we don't need to add something to our to-do list. We can look at what we're already doing in our life, what is already giving us joy, helping us have meaning, helping us to be present, to ourselves and others and everything around us, and identify the ways in which that can be sacred. So that's a lot of what I do and most spiritual directors do. Sometimes spiritual direction can involve some silence and sitting in that with another person. Sometimes it can involve prayer or readings, but it is really up to what the person is wanting and needing from that individual.
And it is also coming from yourself to be insightful and listen. It takes great listening skills because it's going to be those key words, how they interject, that you'll be wanting to maybe press in a bit or having them meditate over it or chew over it a little bit more and such. So what brought you to be a chaplain? What brought you to be a spiritual director? Like what a passion, really.
Yes, it's not a normal career path. I grew up, I was a very precocious kid and went to church with my family, and I loved going to church. My family was kind of surprised that I took to it so much. They kind of did it a little bit more as a social activity, but I really enjoyed it. And from a young age, I was convinced not only of God's presence in my life, but I was convinced that God wanted me to help people. And to help the most people possible, I thought I needed to be a doctor. That was kind of the route that I think my mother had something to do with this. My mother was a nurse, so I think she kind of put that in my ear. And I really enjoyed thinking about medicine. I would read the Merck Medical Manual for fun as a kid. I would listen to my mom's stories. I volunteered in hospital as I don't know if they had this in Canada, as a candy striper, where you wore the red and white kind of candy cane
Age,
jumper. Okay. Now thankfully our volunteers don't have to wear those. Our volunteers can wear just regular polo shirts in the hospital. And then I worked as an EMT on the backs of ambulances for many years. And it was during that time where, we could do minimal, repair and give some, oxygen and medicine and provide safe transport to the hospital. But really what I enjoyed about it was being with people when they were vulnerable, holding their hands when they were scared, helping to, help the family members breathe a little bit and to try to keep them as calm as we could. And so that I think was really the start of the work that I'm doing. And then I became a patient myself, and eventually had gotten a diagnosis of generalized epilepsy, but it took a long time to get there and lots of hospitalizations and lots of doctors that frankly did not have the best bedside manner. And it was around that time that the pastor at my church took me out just for dinner and talked to me and helped me to process some of what was going on and what it was doing to my relationship with God that all of this was unfolding. And looking back, I recognized, I was like, oh, she was giving me pastoral care. And now that's so much of what I do as a result of having received it myself. And wanting others to be able to have someone alongside them on their spiritual journey. So that's why I enjoy training people in it. And then the spiritual direction piece came in the midst of COVID. I thought, okay, I need to do more. I need to be able to do something deeper, and really did it for my own purposes, right? Wanting to fill myself up. My spiritual director said, go do the training because it'll help you. And it did. It introduced me to practices I had never even heard of, having been in the church all my life. And so now I get to introduce some of those to others as well.
That is so incredible. And wow, what a journey that you've been on yourself. So diverse, but you in the midst of it actually being a patient as well. And it's so incredible. It's amazing when you get to see how God touches people. And then for us, it's this step back kind of third person. Wow, God's been amidst the whole thing. It's kind of like he's orchestrated the whole piece. He's always ahead of us. And it's for us just to, always recognize, okay, we've got to catch up. He's already cleared the path. Let's see if we can actually see where that path is.
Right.
So
Well, and that's my quick and cleaned up version, but as I was going through it, oh, it did not look that clean. And that's what I remind people of all the time, right? When you're in the midst of something and you're trying to make meaning of it, or you're trying to see God's role in your life, it can often be unclear and lead to, a lot of frustration, right? I had lots of nights where I was praying to God, what is this? Where is this going? What would you want of me? And how do I serve you? And but yeah, now, looking back, it seems a lot of a clear path. While I went through it felt rather windy and lots of switchbacks.
Do you find, this is just a quick side before we finish, but do you find that people, let's say, I know that, so being evangelical myself, I find I'm taking a step back and kind of unwinding some of the teachings and going back to the Bible and saying, okay, it's really supposed to be pretty simple. And I find that sometimes we really do go hard at our religion and we don't press hard enough into that silent time and understanding the Bible or understanding what our purpose is with him. Do you find that to be a difficulty with many?
I do. I think it's a difficulty within our society, right? We're not used to being quiet. We're not used to listening. We're not even used to listening to other people, right? That's why I teach so much of what I do, because it's hard to listen to people. We can hear people. We can be in conversation with people, but sometimes it is really hard to be in the presence of someone who is suffering. And bear witness to that. And in the same way, I think it can be hard to be in relationship with God and just try to be open to where God might be leading us without us putting our own interpretation on, you know, what we think God wants, right? And it's a hard thing to do. I think it takes a lot of intentionality, a lot of practice. I do think it helps to be with other people, you know, which is why I would advocate being in some sort of a community setting, working with, you know, a spiritual director, a coach, a clergy person, a chaplain, because I have found that it has helped me to have others guide me through it. And then there's times where I feel like I can access it myself, but it can vary.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people who are reaching out or are looking for that assistance, I think it's very important, because a lot of us aren't able or wanting to spend that deep time without someone guiding along with us, right? Because it is scary. It can be very lonely. And sometimes it may feel as though we're in this all by ourselves. No one else does this. Everyone else looks to be fine. When we question things or we want to understand our own purpose and our own future and our own personal relationship with God. So I think that is absolutely incredible. I love how, I can just imagine how diversified that you would be when you have so many different people. And as you're walking from room to room in pastoral care, it's like this, you've got to be able to
you never know what you're going to get when you walk through the door, which keeps it interesting.
Which is so exciting, because no one likes a dull job. So it's such a passion. I can see it. I can see how you get so excited about it, and what a blessing to have that vivaciousness when you talk about your career and you talk about what your passion is, and that you're moving forward with forward thinking and bringing your passion into teaching and shepherding other people into what it means to be a pastoral care. So I think that is absolutely incredible. So tell me, where can people find you?
Sure. So people can find me on my website. It is Christine, V as in Victor, Davies, .com. And I also do host a weekly emailed newsletter where I talk about different spiritual practices. I share stories from my work in the hospital, or also ideas about how to listen and how to be with others more effectively. And so you can sign up for that there, or it's through Substack, which is Journeying Alongside at Substack.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. So I always finish, what word of wisdom do you have that you share often or that you feel is on your heart at the moment?
So often what I share is around, we didn't talk about this, but is around grief and loss. And it's just honoring that and the ways in which that comes up for us. And so I like to tell people that anytime there's a change in our lives, that can bring loss. And so that means that we're always changing and we're always potentially grieving something. So that is another reason to reach out to get some spiritual support, because we are all changing all the time and therefore all grieving all of the time. And so a lot of what I like to tell people is to normalize that. All that they are holding in any given moment, even happy change, can bring loss to it as well.
That's so true. We have become a very grieved aspect due, I think, to a bit of the COVID aspect, but the majority of our population is aging, and it's a natural process. And a lot of us I don't think we're brought up in a sort of setting where death was a natural process. It happens. And I love that because grief is something that is natural, and we need to start identifying it as being a process. It's and we need to
Yeah,
have
and we're
things.
and we have loss along the way, right? It's not just about death. It's about getting older. It's about, all of the losses that come with aging.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that if you are experiencing grief, reach out to a spiritual director, someone in pastoral care, reach out to your church to understand and process this because you need someone to come alongside you and walk you through the process. Someone like Christine is a beautiful, beautiful human being that's just passionate about helping people, coming alongside of them, and helping them to become what God has created them to be. Thank you so much, Christine. This has been an absolute pleasure, and I thank you for joining me on the Wise Divine Woman podcast.
It's been wonderful to chat with you. Thank you.
Thank you.